Okay, we are on at last with Anne LaBerge. Hi again, Anne.
Hi.
Okay, welcome back. We were talking about a couple of things. You started to talk about the shackle stick.
Right. We got as far as that a CD was going to be made, but we thought a USB stick would be more fun. And a designer colleague who I've worked with a lot, Isabel Vigier, helped find the materials and the right USB stick, and she also came up with the idea that we should make a card game to go with it, because a USB stick is such a small thing. So the package has a card game that represents the interactive improvisation system that Robert and I work with, and that it's a very beautiful coffee table piece. But what has ended up with the card game is some of my colleagues that I've worked with in workshops, some young people who also teach kids or teach workshops, have used this card game in their teaching. That means it's not only a USB stick, but it's a whole system.
That's so cool.
And it's,
yeah.
And it's just beautiful, and the visual on it is so beautiful. It's this sort of, all the pieces, including the USB stick, are wood and paper that's brownish, and just, it almost looks like kind of a paper bag that turns into this magical electronic and programming tool.
It has that recycled look.
Yeah, it does.
is there a short URL that you can give to tell people where they can see that and purchase it?
Yeah. Shackle, shackle.eu.
Cool.
And it's called the Shackle Stick.
Right. So they can find out more there. In the meantime, I want to turn real quickly to this recent documentary done about you with some very complimentary surrounding description. How did that come about?
There's an institute in Vienna called IMA, I-M-A. And they're dedicated primarily to promoting and exploring women sound creators. And a few years ago, they started a series of DVDs about women composers, like Eliane Radiga is on it.
Yeah.
And I'm number 7 in that series. They did the filming a couple years ago in Vienna, and it costs money to put these to do the editing and the production, and so finally the money came through to produce it, and it just came out early July and was premiered. The DVD and a performance of mine were premiered in Berlin at the Heroines of Sound Festival, I think July 10th, and that was all a wonderful experience for me. The film can actually be seen online if you look up probably IMA Vienna or something like that. You'll be able to dig around and find it. It's a portrait.
And actually, we can get, if we go to your website,
annelaberge.com,
we can click the link and go right to it.
Yeah, because one of my blogs, I put the link up. Yeah.
Now you're working in a new group. How did this group come about? Because it represents kind of a good thing coming out of a kind of a dark situation in finance.
Oh, you're talking about Splendor.
Splendor.
Yeah, Splendor is a group of 50 musicians got together. The driving force was a bass player from the radio orchestra. And we came up with money by putting money in ourselves and also finding donors and sponsors and stockholders to renovate an old bathhouse in the old city of Amsterdam. And we have two halls and practice areas and a wonderful bar, and we were able to renovate this bathhouse, and now it's a very active mecca of music from classical through to free improv. It's hard work.
I bet it is. What has happened with the funding situation over there for music and the arts in general?
Well, have you heard horror stories?
I have heard horror stories, but maybe you could make them sound more horrific.
Actually, I think probably 5 years ago, there were some severe budget cuts. About 40% of the music budget was cut. But as in all economic dips and curves and hills and valleys, the not everything disappeared. It was just that the funding was changed. And it is true, a funding cut like that is very severe in some ways. And we're all managing in our own way to make art and music happen. It's not as if there is no music and art.
Right.
It's just the strengths and weaknesses have been redistributed. But it does mean that we, for instance, as creators, the funding does not come as easily and clearly as it and directly as it used to.
Eve, are you writing a question down there?
No, I'm writing notes.
Oh, she's writing
notes.
All
this stuff is so interesting.
Okay. Need for URLs. Eve, it's all on my website.
Cool. Okay.
AnneLaberge.com. LABERGE. It's a very interesting website. Lots of good stuff. Blogs are great. The video biography is fantastic, and there's lots of good stuff there. And I'm a great fan, have been for years, of Anne's work, in both as I first met her as a flutist who was experimenting on the edge of that technique right through the electronics, her use of, you used the Arduino board for a while, I believe. And
I still use Arduino.
Oh, you still use it. Okay.
But now I'm using the Kima for my processing.
Aha, uh-huh. And we just were talking to Scott Miller, who was also using the Kima for his work.
That's
so.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a real expert.
All right. Well, we're going to head to another guest in our celebration, and just thank you so much for joining us here on Calvus and Damien's 20th anniversary.
You're welcome, and say hi to everyone for me.
Will do.
Such a pleasure.
Okay.
Man.
Bye.
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 So, yeah, Anne LaBerge, and just a quick little story. We're about to have Eric Nielsen in, and while Eric's making his way. It's so funny because Anne LaBerge had her infant daughter Diamanda, kind of a honorific to Diamanda Galas, the performance artist, and my wife's daughter Lila was her babysitter when we lived in Amsterdam, and that's how we first met Anne and her husband David Dram. And we later did a program called Amsterdam, which was that huge live concert that we did. I was in Amsterdam, you were here, and we were using a very nascent internet to kind of hold this concert online. It was very difficult because you may remember the Star Report about Bill Clinton's escapades was issued that very night.
Right, and there was some busy traffic on the internet waves.
Which means that when I said something, by the time I heard your answer, it was 17 seconds later.
There is a device in the station that it's called the what is it called? The synthetic box? It has a 10-second...
Symmetric.
Symmetric.
Box. Yeah, but we call it the dump box or
yes.
Something else.
And if people say nasty things, we can eliminate it. But because we have such upstanding guests here on the bazaar, that won't happen. Unless our next guest proves us wrong.
Well, that's always a possibility. Our next guest, and you hear the creaking door for the next guest, is Eric Nielsen. He's right here in the studio with us.
Oh, John and Beth are here also. That's good news, but it's not their turn.
So, Eric, have a seat. We played a movement of your string quartet earlier on while we had a little schedule shuffle. So we've heard one movement of that, and what we have you here for is to talk about your opera.
Okay.
Such enthusiasm.
Sorry. I've been very... very busy the last year and a half as the producer of the revived and revised version of A Fleeting Animal, which is the opera that David Budbill and I created in 2000. It's based on portions of his play Judevine, about a small northern Vermont town and a young veteran who returns home scarred by his experiences. And there he meets a young single mother, and they fall in love. But this being an opera, things end rather tragically.
But, good.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the thing is that one of the main characters in the opera is actually the town and its people. And the opera is also about perseverance, and it's about living in Vermont and the four or five or six seasons, depending on how one counts it. and the ups and downs of life in a small town. And I think it's fairly universally applicable. But we've been working hard raising the money for it, and now we have a magnificent cast and a wonderful instrumental ensemble and a great direction team and crew, and they're very hard at work in rehearsal, and opening night is, oh goodness, 3 weeks from yesterday. So it's September 11th. It will be given six performances in different areas of Vermont, and now over 2 weekends, and we're really looking forward to it.
We have a couple clips here to play. What shall we go with first? We have the opportunity to play Act 1, Scene 6, Scene 3, or Scene 4, and introduce them, if you will.
Okay, let's go with Act 1, Scene 6, which is the first one chronologically. The other two are from Act 2.
Act 2, yes, sir.
And let me give you a little bit of background. When Tommy is at war, one of the things that is different about the opera from the play, Judivine, is we find out how he gets scarred. He has to make a mercy killing of one of his friends who begs him to shoot him because he's mortally wounded, and Tommy obliges, but he's very haunted by that. And at the end of the act, after he and his two friends from Vietnam who come to visit him, William and James, and Grace, Tommy's love interest, are together meeting and greeting each other, there's a scream from off stage, and someone rushes in from further down the road and starts yelling about how some vehicle has struck a bear, and the bear is lying in the road moaning and in pain, and people gather and they all wring their hands and they don't do anything. So the four people, Tommy and Grace and William and James, rush out of Tommy and Grace's trailer, and they go and look at what's going on, and Tommy takes one look at the bear and he goes back into the trailer and he gets his rifle and he comes out and he shoots the bear, and then he turns on the townspeople and berates them for standing around and doing nothing and letting the bear suffer. And we can see that while that's going on, he's flashing back to his experience in Vietnam.
So this is one of the lighthearted moments.
Yes, indeed.
Act 1, Scene 6, from A Fleeting Animal by Erik Nielsen.
Thank you.
You're listening to WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick. And you just heard a selection from A Fleeting Animal, an opera by Eric Nielsen and libretto by David Budbill, Judevine. And Eric is now going to tell us a little bit more about it. Give credit where credit is due.
Yes, credit where credit is due.
Yes, what you heard was an excerpt from the fifth performance of Six done in October of 2000 in the original production, which was commissioned and produced by Vermont Opera Theater, and they deserve a great deal of credit for taking a chance on an unknown piece, and to all the cast for carrying it out, because they didn't have any history. I mean, it's hard to do a two-hour piece when you don't know how it sounds until you create it,
yeah.
But
yes.
We all know that.
Yes.
So the group this year, of course, has had sound files to work with, as well as a computer-printed score rather than my original hand-printed one. But this set of performances is being co-sponsored by the Monteverdi Music School in Montpelier, who are our fiscal agent and who have helped us with letting us use their liability policy and are letting us use their space for rehearsal, which
rehearsals,
has been
yeah.
a fabulous, fabulous thing. So we have just an unbelievable cast and instrumental group, and Ann Decker, who was the music director the first time, has returned in that role, and we have Margot Whitcomb as our stage director, and she's just fantastic in the way she's thinking about the production and the questions she asks and how thoroughly she's going about things, and it's just a wonderful group of people, and I think people who come to this are going to be really glad that they did.
We'll hear another excerpt in a second. Just quickly, the upcoming performance is just a few weeks, which is why Eric is exhausted here. We're looking at him. He's like, oh, my God, let me out of here. September 11th, 12th, 13th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. And since each one is in a different place, go to www.afleetinganimal.com for all the performance dates, September 11th through 20th. An opera from Judevine, A Fleeting Animal. Introduce us to this last segment here. We're going to hear Act 2, Scene 4.
Well, things aren't always unhappy in Judevine, and
thank goodness.
And one of the things that's wonderful yes. about living in Vermont is that, brief though it may be, we do experience summer. And those of us who live in the North Country know that it is something that is also fleeting, and so we have to get the most out of it possible. And so in the preceding scene, we've had a big full cast blues about summer and what it's like, first of all, to play softball, and then also what it's like to squeeze everything possible into 90 days between the last frost of spring and the first frost in the fall. And as the rest of the cast and chorus move off to the side, Tommy and Grace and William and James sing about how lovely it is in the evening in Judevine, and this cut is called, this scene is called A Pastoral Interlude, and it's subtitled In the Cool of the Evening.
By our guest today, Eric Nielsen.
Thank you.
Quickly there.
It's because it runs right into the next scene.
That's Act 2, Scene 4 from A Fleeting Animal by Eric Nielsen. Eric, thank you so much for joining us on the 20th anniversary celebration of Calvus and Damien.
Well, you're welcome and congratulations.
What, for sticking it out? You know, we
you got it. Endurance counts.
That's it.
We're going to jump across the pond again and speak to Emily Doolittle. Emily Doolittle was on our show a long time ago, and one of the interesting things is that since then she has, I think, been in maybe four countries. Anyway, let's just see here if we can get her on the show.
Hello?
Hey, Emily, it's Calvos and Damien.
Hey, good to hear from you.
Okay. Hey, we got video going. We don't need the video, but it's great to see you.
You don't need video? Okay. Can I turn it off?
Okay.
I actually put on a clean shirt.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, there we go. All right. There we got back to the single picture of you and a pair of horses. Okay. So welcome to Calvus and Damien's 20th anniversary show. Tell us what's been going on in all these years. You've gone everywhere, it seems.
We just actually, we arrived in Glasgow about a month ago. All our belongings just arrived a couple days ago. So I'm sitting here surrounded by boxes.
Okay, so well, just a couple of things. Then, what did you do in each place? Because you were at home, you were in Princeton, you were in, I forget where you were. You were just all over the place.
I don't even remember where I was when I first met you. But yeah, I did my doctorate at Princeton. Then I moved to Montreal for 5 years. I just was freelancing there.
There it goes again. Audio has disappeared.
Well,
there she is. Back again. Okay.
Oh, oops. Did I disappear?
Yeah, you disappeared briefly.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so yeah, I was in Seattle for 7 years teaching at Cornish College of the Arts. And then we had the opportunity to move to Glasgow, and I was ready to spend more time composing and less time teaching.
Okay. So yeah. Make a move.
Hello?
Oh,
yes.
We're still okay. Here, sort of.
Less time teaching and more time composing. That's where we left.
Exactly, yeah. So that, right, I've just gotten here. Now I'm surrounded by boxes, which I need to unpack before I can actually start composing. But, I just finished a chamber opera for an ensemble in Shetland, which are the islands way in the north of Scotland, sort of halfway to Norway. So it was just up there for a performance, and we have a few more performances coming up in the spring.
Well, we were just talking about, to Eric Nielsen, about an opera. What is your opera's topic? Is it about the Shetlands?
It's based on a Shetlandic folktale called Jan Tate and the Bear. I went to Shetland for the first time about 5 years ago, and I encountered this folktale. And I really like it because I think it dates back to the medieval, to the 1400s. And it's possible that it's all true. It's possible that a lot of it's made up. It's sort of, I like the way it sort of blends history and possible fantasy. And there's certain details that you would think aren't true, but actually are true. Like at that time, Shetlanders had to pay taxes to the Norwegian king in the form of butter. So the king would send, people over in ships to take all the butter from the Shetlanders for their taxes. And that's actually true. And so this folktale sort of, involves a bear and somebody who got in a dispute over the taxes and possibly brought this bear. I mean, in the folktale, he brought the bear back to Shetland. It possibly actually happened in real life, too. Nobody knows.
Did we get the phrase butter you up from that?
Oh, I went, that's a good question. Maybe. It was a couple of years ago, while I was writing this opera, there actually was a butter shortage in Norway. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Butter shortage. The concept is wonderful. We're gonna play one of your pieces. We're gonna play the A Short Slow Life.
Oh, great!
Could you give an intro to that for us?
Yeah, that piece I wrote in 2011 for Susie LeBlanc and Symphony Nova Scotia. It was in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the birth of the poet Elizabeth Bishop, I believe. And it was a really special commission for me because I grew up in Nova Scotia. So Symphony Nova Scotia is sort of the orchestra I grew up hearing. I took lessons from a number of people in the orchestra. So in a way, and it's, many of the same people are still in the orchestra when I was growing up there. So it almost felt like writing a large chamber piece. I knew almost everybody that was writing for and was really thinking about, who would be playing each line and what it would sound like and things like that. So,
well, before we run it, we're going to give our thanks to you for joining us on Calvis and Damon for the 20th anniversary show, and best of luck in unpacking all your boxes.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I wish I could be there in person.
Oh, it would have been terrific. We haven't seen you since. Actually, we had a little lunch in Montpelier at one point.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That was 10 years ago now, yeah.
That's a long time. So anyway, Emily Doolittle, now across the pond in yet another place with boxes to unpack. And here it is. Thank you. And here it is. A Short, Slow Life.
Thanks.
Thank you.
microphones. Yes. Emily Doolittle's music, absolutely gorgeous. We have enjoyed her music throughout the Cowles and Damien days, and her personality as well. She's really got a sense of being sort of this international musician, just very gently moving from place to place and doing new pieces. That was A Short Slow Life by Emily Doolittle. We now have someone in the studio, but before we get to this someone in the studio...
No, this is background music, supposedly.
Background music? Okay. We have many, many people to thank who helped make Cowles and Damien's 20th anniversary possible. Of course, WGDR itself, I mean, just as sort of as an institution, which as an institution allowed us to come back. Chris Gruen, the station manager, said yes, which was a big deal. And of course, our co-hosts, Eve McLaren and Robert Bonotto here in the afternoon. And then Jim Cross, who had a show on the station for a long time, and David Ferland, especially David Ferland, who is just sort of waved his hands and thousands of cables went into place, kind of like a reverse Medusa.
Yeah, not all of them went into place the same in where they're supposed to go, but most of them
did. They did. Oh, yeah, but they did.
They did.
Nothing
all?
Exploded, and it was quite wonderful. David Ferland, a great person to actually just sort of enjoy being around. And then our tech team and our team of cooks and everything else, David Morneau, Caleb Boardman, and Zach Hartling, who did a wonderful lunch. Ben Spound, who just whipped one of the hardest pieces we have to perform into shape. Chelsea Gibbs and Megan McCormick, who also made wonderful things for lunch and made sure I had coffee. That can't be understated enough. And sort of riding herd on our collection of people and making sure that the food was all right and everything intact. Zona Hostetler, we just loved having her here. And of course, our entire production is made possible by WGDR, WGDH Community Radio, and the Randy Hostetler Living Room Music Fund. So it's been a great half show so far, and we have a couple hours to go, and here we are with, in the studio, the man who never ages. I saw this on Twilight Zone once. He looks just like him, dude. Did you notice that?
No, but he looks just like him.
John Levin. Here he is in the studio. Hi, John.
Hey, also known as Dorian Gray.
Yes, that too.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back. And also, again, I'd like to just reiterate all those thanks you just went through, because lunch was great.
Yes, Zach Hartling, who was one of my students in composition, is also a chef, and he just did a brilliant job, just spectacular job.
We are, by the way, listening to one of your tunes right now. If you were wearing headphones, you'd know this.
Oh, that's how we're going to fast forward to the section where...
Is this not it?
Yeah, that's the right piece.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're just waiting.
Oh, should I fast forward some more?
Are we at about 3.5 minutes?
How do I know?
It counts backwards.
It counts. Yes, this is going written reverse. We're going back in time, I might.
Okay, so it's about 18 minutes long. So,
right, we're at 17:04.
Yeah, we can talk for a little bit longer. I was trying to think of a joke, you know, to have for the show, just because. I mean, well, I always get nervous when I come in the show anyway, because, I mean, I think I'm a lighthearted guy and everything, but. Yeah. But whenever I get on the show, for some reason, I always get, like, deathly serious.
It's true.
It's so true. And then you guys are always, like, really funny, and I, like, try to go with the flow.
And it never works.
It just never works.
No,
I know what happens. You put me in this room in front of the microphone, and I just lose it. Any part of me that's, like, funny or that's gracious or that's, I don't know, it's just like, whee!
It's like the Parade of the Heifers or whatever that is down in Brattleboro, right, done by ice people.
Oh, what a concept.
Wow. So instead of the strolling of the heifers.
That's
yes,
it.
Strolling of the ice people.
Wow. It's the strolling of the glaciers.
Yeah. Speaking of glaciers, are we there yet? We're now at 1608.
Yeah, fine. Let's just listen to it for a while.
We can talk over it if you like, or we can just not.
Listen, let's listen.
All right, here we go away.
Thank you.
It's like heifer music.
Pfeffernuss.
Well, it's close. I mean, the title of this piece is Oswego Tea. It's actually Oswego Tea 2010, because there's two pieces called Oswego Tea. Oswego Tea...
Is that like iced tea, or is that like iced T-E-A?
Oswego Tea is the other name for bee balm.
Ah. We grow lots of that.
So, I mean, the heifers, if the heifers got in the Oswego Tea patch, they would probably be happy.
Happy. You see them just sort of rolling over slowly.
I'm going out on a limb here, but is this what one would term electroacoustic?
Space music.
Space.
Yeah, you could say
come
that.
Come on, I mean, we gotta, come on, be funny like you promised.
Okay, what would I say? Well, the joke I was going to make was I was going to say, like, you know, well, 15 minutes. The problem with my piece is that, like, after 15 minutes, we finally get to the second note.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, so...
I thought I heard a second note a moment ago, but I think we're back on the first one again.
You know, when you... when you're making CDs of your music on your Macintosh, if you use a Macintosh, you have to figure out like which genre you want to use. And I always use electronic. But you know, in iTunes, it's true that right before electronic in E is easy listening.
Ah,
they knew.
But this is not that easy to listen to because one is tempted to just get up and jive.
Mm.
Yeah, this is. I'm having a little difficulty restraining my tapping mechanism.
It's because you're scratching yourself.
We weren't supposed to see that.
Well,
it's radio.
Well, the alternate title for this when I was making this piece in 2010 was, you know, in Audacity, before I named it Oswego Tea, it was just called Beta Beat.
Uh-huh. I thought it was titled In Audacity.
Beta Beat.
That's the beat that's grown in
after the alpha beat.
Right, yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. In like October, when the alpha beat's kind of...
Oh, man.
Tell us about this piece, then.
And how you made it, of course.
Okay.
We're always interested in it.
Let's think. So, this is 2010.
No, this is 2015.
Now
we're just going back to 2010.
And this is made in my studio. And I believe this, if I'm not mistaken, this is made in two takes.
What if you are mistaken? Then what is it?
Then it's all done in one take.
Okay.
So
yes.
generally, most of the time, it's usually done in one take. Most recently, actually, the piece I didn't play, I picked this one just because this of all my pieces is my favorite at the moment. I don't know if like you have favorites with children or not, but like with my pieces at the moment, this is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative that I was going to bring is the first time that I've actually, in a long time, like, chose the notes in advance and actually, like, composed. So generally when I make these pieces, I walk to my studio, I turn everything on, I tune up the synthesizers, and I go, well, let's see what happens. And then as it happens, we retune things, we modulate things, we delay things, and we listen some more. And after doing that for a long time, I decided it's really finally time to make, like, decisions, like, moment-to-moment actual decisions that I make.
But the aleatoriness in you must have really rebelled.
It was really hard, yeah. It's interesting. One of the things that got me to go to do this was the death of Robert Ashley, whose music was really very important to me. And after he died, well, the Kyle Gann book came out very shortly before he died, the biography. So I read the biography shortly before he passed away. And then I got the big thick book, Outside of Time, which is Ashley's theory book. And so I read the whole thing. It's pretty thick. And I found a lot in there that was about structure, which I was surprised to find it in a book by Robert Ashley, but it turned out there was a lot of structure in there.
Well, I mean, a guy who wrote some extremely well-structured operas, I don't think you would, you know, you might get the impression it isn't just because they have this combination of expansiveness, lightheartedness in some ways, and poppiness to some degree. And you think, oh, well, there's nothing to that. But, you know, you don't carry out an opera like, oh, what is Atalanta without having a real strong sense of structure.
Yeah. Yeah, so I also find a lot about numbers in the book, and numbers as a organizing principle for how to do things. So as a sort of as someone coming back and reapproaching, like, how do I organize? I started to think about numbers a lot. So in the work I'm working right now, I'm working with two sets of numbers. One are Fibonacci numbers, and the other set of numbers I'm using, for the people out in the world, Fibonacci numbers are numbers. Well, Fibonacci, who did the rabbits? Who figured out the rabbits? Like, you have one rabbit,
you mean,
and you have
Jack Cottontail or Peter Rabbit?
Yeah, no, I can't remember. One of the mathematicians used rabbits to describe the numbers. You have one rabbit, then you get two rabbits, then they have three rabbits. And then they keep, so then you get five rabbits, and you get eight rabbits, and you get 13
rabbits,
and then you get 21 rabbits,
and then you get 34 rabbits, right?
Right, which turned out they also are like golden section ratios and everything. Like, it's an interesting number. The other series of numbers I got interested in are the prime numbers, but not the prime numbers themselves, but there's this other thing which is called the prime gap. And the prime gap is the difference between sequential. And the weird thing about the prime gap is that you would think it would be very random. You'd think that, and that they wouldn't, that the gap wouldn't grow, sort of. And instead, what happens is the prime gap going all the way up to 97 is really small. It goes like 1, 2, 2, 4, 6, 2, 4, 2, 2, and it has no pattern, but it's a small sequence of really beautiful, non-repeating small numbers. And so the work that you're not hearing this work, but that's what the stuff I'm working with now in determining note to note events is through those two things.
What I find interesting is that we sometimes as composers look for ways of structuring our music because at least I know I get very tired of traditional structures, and I look for other ways of discovering how notes go together, mm-hmm. or how not just notes, but how events, whatever you want to call them, go together. And so you search for existing number patterns or sequences. I wrote a piece years ago, which I abandoned because it was so awful, but had a good idea behind it, which was a dripping water faucet, and using the prediction of the drips through a hierarchy to create the piece. But you always look for something else. I mean, you know, you're when you had sonata allegro form, you had something that helped you structure the piece, and you had a common practice harmony that helped you structure the harmonies and expectations about where the melody would go. So you were very limited in where you put your creative effort within that. But now we're well past the days of simplified structures, and now we're sort of on our own. And so you search for these tools that exist in nature, exist in mathematics, exist even to look at the mountains and try to figure that out. Okay, sorry. Oh. Did I get serious on you?
Don't let it happen again.
I'm sorry, I take it all back.
So if there were a video stream, you would see I'm smiling.
It's, yes, it's that's like right. Who else is going to do Fibonacci numbers with you after all?
Exactly,
that's
right.
That's right.
What else can I say? One thing I will say, you know, throwing the flow of the past 2 hours, my day gig is I'm an IT support technician at a small college in Powell River, Vermont. And I will say it's not a law. Maybe you could call it Levin's Law or something, but it's true. Anytime, I've worked as an IT technician now for 18 years. As long as you rely on Skype, it will fail.
Excellent. Levin's Law.
Levin's Law.
If you don't need Skype, it'll be fine. But if you rely on Skype, it will fail.
John Levin, we're going to listen to your piece out. Without us interrupting.
Is that listen out? Is that a new verb?
Listen out.
I can verb anything you want me to verb.
Ooh, that's like an adverb.
Oh,
it's like the crook in vaudeville, right? It's kind of what it is.
we're giving you the hook here with 4 minutes and 35 seconds to go. John Levin, thanks very much for joining us once again after many years on Calvus and Damien. You were one of the people that helped us put together our Ottawan Festival in 2001. Never forget your enormous help with that festival as well.
And like a bad penny, he kept coming back.
Yeah, why does that happen? But still looking the same.
Yes, he is not unaged.
Dorian Gray.
Alrighty, I guess we'll listen to this out and then we won't anymore.
Thanks, and very welcome to both. Thank you and welcome.